big believer in action. So you learn something, that's great, talk about theory, but it's still only an idea until you put it out into the world and actually start making it happen.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your SMB spend without buying an ERP, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Keith Wright from K Wright Consultancy. We were just joking, it's the most straightforward company name that you can come up with. But as they say, in computer science, there's only two problems, hard problems in computer science. One is naming, and it's very hard to name. So I admire the straightforwardness of that. Keith is probably the most credentialed person I've had on the podcast. He's gone deep on procurement with significant training and many years of experience, all the way up to publishing his own book. So we're going to touch on this today. Keith has a passion for procurement and the difference it can make to businesses, large and small. And we're going to, don't turn off, because I also have that passion. I think he's dead right. And by the end of it, I hope you will have that passion too. So Keith, thanks very much for coming on the show. Maybe you could kick things off by telling us something about you that not many people know.
Gosh. Well, let's go nothing to do with procurement. So I've performed on stage in a band. Well, let's say band, that's a bit too generous. In a dance troupe called Dad Zone. So completely left field. My wife's a theatre teacher, a theatre school teacher. And do you know what's great about that? Completely takes out your comfort zone. You do not take yourself seriously when you're standing on stage, in some cases dressed as a penguin in front of hundreds of people, just having fun and realizing that life's too short. So get stuck in. And it's great for your confidence too. So there you go. There's a fact that people might remember.
Years and years ago, my wife said to me, James, the thing I like about you is you never get embarrassed. And then I turned around to her and I said, oh, when should I have been embarrassed? And I wasn't aware, you know, so maybe it washes that out of you. And who's your audiences? Do you keep your clothes on for this? Or
yes. It's a family show. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. Well, there you go. Maybe you've worked with Keith and you never knew that. But now you know. Mm-hmm. All right. From the ridiculous to the sublime, I guess, or to the serious, which is credibility. Maybe you could just tell us about some of your biggest career successes so far, so we can establish, you know, the gravitas you're bringing to this conversation.
Yeah. Look. I mean, I've been in two things actually. I've been in procurement roles for about 30 years, and I've also tended to typically operate in the building supplies industry. So I've kicked a few tires. I've had many negotiations. I was trying to add up on the base of 30 years, I've probably done over 1,000 deals, probably more so actually. And you think about how many negotiations go into that. So like time spent, you know, dealing with people, dealing with businesses, and actually all around the world. You know, it's not an ego trip, but you know, I've been to many countries, and when you're dealing with different cultures and different approaches to things, that's really interesting. So yeah, when you add that up, it probably is hundreds of millions of pounds worth of savings, of value creation, to use a consultancy phrase. But it's not just about kind of buy cheaper, it's about quality, which we'll get into with procurement. It's about reliability, it's about service, it's about all of that proposition. So that's probably the thing that I'm most proud of, is, you know, creating genuine, long-lasting value through the art of professional procurement.
And you've also invested in your academic credentials as well, if I'm not wrong. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, the thing I realized, I mean, I was in PLC corporate world for about the first 27 years of my 30-year career. Actually, it's 31 now this year. So the last 4 years I've been a consultant. And one of the things I realized when I stepped out of the professional kind of corporate world is that suddenly the only person who's going to invest in me is me, it's my company. So how do I do that? And I think, yeah, there's a bunch of people. I had a coach called Jane Baylor that was very good, that sort of really got me thinking about developing the business, like the real client focus. And yeah, I know we'll talk about socials, but how to dial up a lot of the work. And then I worked with a guy called Daniel Priestley, went through his KPI. It was like an accelerator program for entrepreneurs. So I was working with some really bright, interesting people, obviously Daniel, one of those. But yeah, it's a significant investment when you start in your own business. You know, this is not hundreds of pounds, you know, it's multiples of that. So yeah, that importance of stepping back from doing the job and working not just on the business, but on me as an individual, and investing in those things is really key.
Yeah, I hear that advice a lot on the YouTubes about, you know, invest in yourself, from these people that say, like, you know, put your money into yourself. And then I look at some of the courses and I'm like, oof, that's, I don't know, like, that's a lot. It's hefty, some of them, right? So some of the, like, Tony Robbins is the one I would have gone to, right? And it's thousands of dollars by the time you've got there and done everything or whatever. But this name, Jason Priestley, is it Jason?
Daniel.
Daniel, excuse me. This has come up a couple of times now on the podcast. What made you take the jump and invest in his course? And maybe you could just, let's say a fractional professional out there, would you recommend it as something? Did it help your business, or was it, tell me about it.
Yeah, I mean, talk about the stars aligning. So I'd heard his name too. This was back end of, well, probably middle 2022. And the initial coach I had, Jane, bizarrely, she interviewed him on a podcast, which I didn't know at the time. And I said, oh, Jane. I was like, watched a podcast with Daniel. And I said to myself, right, I'm going to work with this guy. I was just very impressed with what he was doing, that, you know, his enthusiasm, his knowledge. He's just one of these very smart guys that no matter what problem you think, he can just come up with ideas, like, you know, just come up with these things. And literally the next day, something popped up. I attended a free session that he was running, and I just signed up, like, within 24, 48 hours. I thought, there's certain things you think, if you don't, you can overthink it, can't you? You can spend too long, particularly as someone that's in procurement, evaluating things. Is this the right investment? I thought, do you know what? This was start of year two of my business. I believe this is going to happen. In the grand scheme of it, I didn't need many sales to justify the investment. So I went for it, and that was it. I was literally within 4 weeks, I was on the program. It was 6 months. I mean, I know we're going to talk about the book, but part of that, I didn't know at the time, was to encourage you to write a book. So it just accelerated. And the funny thing is, James, I was obviously running the business. So I was, you know, this was like every 2 weeks. It was half a day on a Friday. Mm-hmm. So it was relentless in a good way, that you had to put things into action. I'm a big believer in action. So you learn something, that's great. Talk about theory, but it's still only an idea until you put it out into the world and actually start making it happen. So it was literally, right, we could be on a session on a Friday. Right, I want you to post something right now. Yeah, and here's a framework, go and do it. Put it out there and get some feedback. And it was always just a bit scary, but you just did it, which was great. Yeah, you learned very quickly. So yeah, am I an advocate? Yeah, absolutely. I think it was transformational in terms of my approach to many different parts of my own personal development, my profile, my business, kind of everything associated with it, really. It's been a real, yeah, it was a real accelerator for me back in year two.
So other people have told me that part of his strategy is you need a product for your customers, and then you need a product for your prospects. I'm not sure how he describes it, but you need something to effectively give away, right? So you need something that's useful. And it used to be you could just make ads, and I guess you still can make ads, but in this day and age, you need to deliver value in order to build that brand, not just, you know, shove an ad in their face. I guess we're all getting sick of that. Is this where the book comes in? Is this a way of delivering value to people at scale without having to, you know, spend the hours yourself?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things. I mean, the book is one of them. I mean, there's a free, like, assessment quiz scorecard that's in the book, but it's on the website. And I think it's one of these where, yeah, and it's interesting you talk about maybe some of the big influencers, but they give so much away. And the thing is, you give away ideas, you give away thought leadership, you give away lots of things. It doesn't mean to say that people actually know exactly how to do some of these things, of course. But it's getting the idea out that these things are important, and this is why they're important, and this is the pain we're trying to solve by delivering some of these, you know, solutions to these problems. And I think the more you do that, to me, it's just really enriching, you know, because we all learn, don't we? There's so much out there. That's often the challenge as well, is how do you break through when there's so much content to consume? You know, we're never short of ideas and influence from people.
Okay, well, so this brings us to, I guess, in your own business here, where you're a procurement consultant, because I know that because of the name of your company. And so what is it you're giving away? Or I know you have a framework, the ACE framework, for example. Is that part of how you deliver value without having to spend those hours with clients?
Yeah, the passion I have, you know, and I say I'm slightly biased because I've had procurement roles throughout my career, and I've seen businesses do it well, businesses maybe not do it so well. And I've always been passionate about the significance of having a clear procurement plan when it comes to serving your customers. Now, of course, if you're selling services, it's maybe slightly less as significant as if you're selling product, as an example. But yeah, most things always challenge people. Look around. Anything you can find in your office, out and about, it's come from somewhere. So I think that's the point, is how are things arriving to your customer? And if you're really focused on the customer, then procurement has to play a significant part in that. So yeah, the ACE method is a thread that goes through the book. So it's analyze, create, and execute. And what I typically find is businesses might do, if you're lucky, a bit of all of them. If you're not lucky, maybe one in some capacity. So I tend to find procurement people are quite analytical. Yeah, I'm definitely, I like data, I like insight, I like facts. You can analyze an awful lot of information, which is great. So understanding who is your customer, where's your market, who's your competition, what's your supply chain doing. So you can build all that fact base, which is great. And then what? You know, what's the action that you do with that? So that's kind of then the C, the create part. So we're starting to think about how the team's organized, how we're going to maybe look at a range review process, how we're going to look at the supply management aspect of it. So you're starting to create the components then based upon the insights from the analyze stage to say, well, what are the things now that I want to turn into a plan? And then often it's right, that's it, we've done that, off we go. And we forget to communicate, we forget to actually think about when to implement some of those things, which is the E, which is the execute stage. And again, I've seen thousands of pounds, if not hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of money burned because businesses rush to execute and don't spend enough time on that execution stage. And it's almost unforgivable in my mind to spend all this great time on the first two stages. And you think about, I don't know, I had an example a few years actually. I've been mostly plant-based for 4 years. And I was on the way to a client and I went to Costa. It's not plugged for Costa, by the way. On a January, it was about the third or fourth day of January. And they were plugging Veganuary and they were plugging this new range from one of their plant-based suppliers. I think it was Bosch, and they didn't have any. And I went in for breakfast as a plant-based person and they had no options because they didn't have any. So think about supply chain, think about procurement, think about promotions, think about execution, think about all this joined up. I'm scratching my head thinking, how can a major brand with a major partnership in the biggest thing you're selling to that plant-based community, and literally a week in, you haven't got any. It's a classic example of, you know, this in the real world not actually happening.
So let's go back to this A stage. And so from my analyze stage, like what are the typical, do you come up with KPIs? What are the things you should be looking to analyze? How do you go about that process of, do you look at the account system? Do you go and look at the inventory system? Do you go around talking to people? Like, is every business different or are there some things that are common for everyone?
I think there's some common questions. So the things I would typically want to see, and as I said, I do like a bit of data. So I'd be thinking about, coming from a procurement perspective, I'd be starting with the range. So what are the products you're selling to customers? The flip side, what are the products you're not selling to customers that customers want, which is where the customer feedback loop comes in. But ultimately, where are you making money? What are the things that are driving the most volume, whether it's online, in a store, you know, whatever? What is the sales value of that? Where's the profitability of that? And then you start looking at the market. So, you know, one of the examples I've seen, you know, a business, let's say a business has a, I don't know, my budget is to grow sales by 5% and you grow by 6%. You think, yes, we're winning. We've beaten our budget. We're doing amazing. But where's, you're marking your own homework to a point. So it's, where's the external validation or checks against that? So as an example, let's say you've actually researched the accounts of your competitors, or maybe there's some market data. What happens if the market's grown by 10%? So yes, you may have hit your budget and actually exceeded your budget, brilliant, but actually you've lost market share against your competition because the market has grown by more. So that's some of the insight layer I would bring in, because sometimes you can hold yourself back in terms of ambition because you think you're doing really well, but actually you're actually going backwards against the market. So yeah, that's sort of a context. And yeah, you know, I'm a big fan, you know, again, being in the procurement space, of the role suppliers can play. So of course they've got insight. They deal with other customers apart from just you potentially as the customer. So what are they seeing across the market? What innovation have they got? I'd also be looking at the numbers in a business to see, have I got too many suppliers? Have I got too few suppliers? And both of those can be dangerous. You know, if you've got let's make it up, you know, your biggest selling range through one single source. Mm-hmm. And we all know what global disruptions we've had in the last 4 or 5 years. If you have inflation, if you have shipping issues, if you have, you know, economic events outside of your control, you know, your business can be very at risk in terms of disruption from some of those things. And conversely, if you've got, say, hundreds of suppliers and you're not really spending a lot, well, your spend isn't working very hard. So what I mean by that is, if you can consolidate, of course, the cost of dealing with a large supply chain, the complexity of dealing with a large supply chain, managing all of those things, that can really be, again, enabling you to go and have some better leverage when it comes to your supply base. So all of that is kind of in that analyze stage of getting all the facts, of finding what I would call sort of golden nuggets. You don't need lots of them. If you can find one or two things, you go, oh, there's something there that's tangible. That's something I can now start to work on as a business.
Okay, so straight away there, here's something that I guess most of us don't do. We're in our business. We're not really market facing. You know, we might go and do a bit of competitor research sometimes when we're launching something new, but then we forget, we walk away and the market moves and the tide can go out, as they say. And that's the other side of it. The tide can go out and, you know, you see who's wearing any shorts at that stage. So it's a good one there. I ask this question quite a lot, because when you're bringing on a new client and the client hears, well, we've got an analyze phase, and what they hear straight away is, oh, crap, here goes 50 billable hours before we do anything, you know? So do you come across that resistance, and do you have any tips for getting over? Because it's a catch-22. You need to know the business before you can deliver any value. And at the other hand, you're in a sales situation. You know, the client's looking for something. You're looking to... How do you manage that expectation?
I think it was probably three things, actually. I think the first thing that I find with any client I've worked with, and this might be an obvious point, James, is they've got to want and accept that there is something that they're not happy about.
Right.
So, yeah, nothing's free. You know, if I didn't do the research and nobody does it, well, then potentially saying there's not a problem. If there is an issue, then it's your own team that's got to do the research. So there is a cost. You know, there's always a cost of doing something. Mm. So I think there's got to be an acceptance. Yeah, there's a free tool that I give anyway when I look at any client, which is this scorecard. So it's literally 10 questions. So that they can answer 10 questions. And it's basic things like, have you got some contracts? Have you got some service level agreements? Yeah, are you even categorizing what you're spending and from who? So quite basic things. Very rare anyone gets a high score on this. So there's always areas of risk. So they get a free report. I get some insight and I say, right, okay, here's some areas that I already know that your business is potentially weak in that are almost certainly costing you money. So that doesn't really cost, it's literally 2 minutes. So that's a relatively quick piece of work. What I would then do, and this is part of the phase, is it can be relatively light touch in terms of, so now give me some insight around those things we've found out. So it might be some information on your supply base, it might be some information on your contracts. And relatively quickly, probably in a couple of days, I can do a high level assessment that doesn't actually cost that much in the grand scheme of it to say, I've now proven or not proven that there is a sizable amount in here. And I would say 99 times out of 100, when I've done this piece of work, there is always money. I've never failed to find money. There's always money if you look, A, if you know where to look and then know what to do when you find things out. So yeah, we can manage that for sure.
Okay. So what I heard there was actually 90% of the time within a pretty, you know, you're not talking about months here. You 90% of the time pretty quickly looking at, you can, what I heard, and tell me if I'm wrong, almost cover your fee just by in a few days. Not 100% of the time, this is a trick, but 90% of the time, right? So maybe have you some nice stories there about when you've been able to do that really quickly for a client? I know you can't mention anyone in particular, but like just some examples of the sort of thing that you've been able to do to quickly.
Yeah, it's probably last year now, but within the space of, I think, a month, actually. I mean, this isn't a sale, but I've got a three-day sprint. So it's the quickest, lowest cost entry in for a business working with me. So I had two businesses, both SMEs. So we're talking, I don't know, 15 to 50 million sort of turnover, UK based. Actually, both in one was a specialist distributor and manufacturer of some building materials. The other actually was in pharmaceuticals. So not actually in my normal wheelhouse, but I knew the contact there. Both took the scorecard. Both was quite revealing. I literally spent a day looking at data. So suppliers, spend, customers, cost price inflation came out. So I was interested in, are we managing this with suppliers or not? Or is it just a free-for-all? You know, whatever you want to charge, that's fine. We'll just pay. And importantly, how that cost price inflation related to what they were selling out. Obviously, a margin risk if your cost price inflation is ahead of your selling price inflation. So spent a day, actually then went and visited their business. So interviewed some of their team, had a look at what was going on, validated some of the questions that I'd already had before I went, and then literally prepared a sort of presentation and reported it back. In both instances, I think we ended up with a combined cost of goods opportunity of about 6%. And it was simple processes, active supply management, structuring more strategically, how we consolidate some of those suppliers. They both had a very large tail. So lots and lots of suppliers doing not very much in terms of spend. So big opportunity to consolidate. They had a little price management. So there wasn't really a structured way of suppliers, actually not for suppliers, for them to challenge their suppliers on cost price inflation. So there was just big chunks of things that of course had to be delivered. But I looked at that and yeah, it was potentially hundreds of thousands in both of those businesses. I think it added up across the two, I don't know, 1.5 million or something of opportunity from effectively a 3-day sprint and a relatively low cost for them to do that piece of work.
So if you were to think about the type of business that you would say, listen, I bet my house I can help that person. If they'd only let me, maybe that's happened. Maybe you've had a prospect who's come in and they say, oh God, I could do so much good for this business if only they'd just push the button, let me get in there. So if you're listening to this, someone's listening to this, like who is the person that definitely should just shut up and get onto LinkedIn and get in touch with you now? Like where's the richest, what's that expression at the moment? Where's the most target rich environment for a customer, an ideal customer for you?
Yeah, I mean, I would say for the type of client I work with, it's typically goods for resale. So I'm thinking, I mean, I mentioned building materials. So it doesn't have to be building materials because I said there's a few businesses I've worked with that are outside of that. But typically they've got products, they're either making products or selling products or buying products, so to speak. So yeah, there's something that says we are servicing the end customer with a tangible product. Size does matter in this instance because I'm not a low cost consultant. So
good. Let's spell that out.
This is about, you've got to have, to make it worthwhile for both, right? Yeah. So I would say unless you've got a minimum of probably 10 to 15 million pounds of the sales, it's probably too small to justify me coming in and working with your business. So because the return needs to be so, if you're potentially spending, tens of thousands, you want a decent return and a decent enough spend for me to make that impact. So size, typically, it can be a family business. It doesn't always have to be a family business, but family business, an entrepreneur, a startup, somebody that's potentially got, they're running their business. And often you find that person is really heavily involved in a lot of things. It could be a functional lead either in terms of that business. So they may be thinking, I haven't got enough time. I've got too bloody much to do. I've been there. I've done it for 27 years where my to-do list was off the charts. I think, oh, just one more flipping thing. Like, come on. So when you're stuck in the weeds so much, actually stepping back and thinking, I just can't afford the time or the resource to do some of this stuff.
And would they already have a procurement team or no?
They might do. But I think, I don't want to be disingenuous to some of the clients, but sometimes their procurement team is one person. So that's not really a procurement team. It's a procurement person that often is wearing multiple hats. And that's the other thing is they're so involved in the day job. Sure. That some of the basic foundational things I tend to find can be there. So yeah, it doesn't have to be too complex, actually. There are often some relatively simple things and they're always there. I had them in my old business. There's lots of things I didn't get to. So that there was always things there, but you can be far too close to it that you don't see it when you're in that business.
Okay. So I want to ask you about your social media posting. But before I get to that, just maybe round out the customer piece by telling me, like, who are your, I wouldn't say your favorite children, who are your favorite customers? Like, tell me about some of the experiences you've really enjoyed professionally working with people.
I mean, I mentioned the two SMEs were great because they absolutely recognized that something wasn't okay. And what was interesting actually about those businesses, they were doing really well. So they were doing really well. They were very profitable, but they still recognized that they could do better, which I thought was brilliant. You know, all too often you can get called in when things are really broken, and that's tough. You know, fixing broken businesses is hard. So I think there's a couple of examples where, you know, I've mentioned, I mean, I've worked with some really large companies, you know, like 2 billion, which isn't really my target. You know, I'm not a BCG or a McKinsey, but obviously I know the industry and I know my profession. But I would say, you know, I've got a current client who is seventh generation family business.
Amazing.
Been growing really well, you know, really ambitious, great culture, really great people to work with, really customer focused, very big on relationships. And they, again, recognized that this was a gap, that they wanted some help. So, yeah, that's been really great, because what I've been able to do is help them focus on the things that can impact the customer the most.
Seven generations is amazing. We'll be, some listeners here will be sitting in countries that don't have seven generations. So mind that the company is amazing. Okay, very good. So I said I was going to ask you about the social media thing, because this ties back to, I guess, the Daniel Priestley stuff and how you've been, developed your practice. You've been, tell us about that and how it's helped you, because social media for an old guy like me is like, I get the ick, as they said, as the teenagers say, right? I'm like, oh no, I can't believe my kids think I'm a YouTuber now that I'm doing this, and they're very happy about it, but I'm still like awkward about the whole thing. So tell me, what's been your journey, and has it really helped your business? Like, did TikToks matter? Like, tell me about it.
Yeah, look, I mean, I was definitely probably in your camp, actually. So prior to doing this job, like running my own consultancy, I didn't go on social media at all, really. You know, I had hardly any network, so to speak. I didn't really post. I probably didn't comment. And then it was actually Jane who, before I met Daniel, it was Jane I worked with who started encouraging me to think about the format. And it's quite astonishing to think that's 3 years on. And I pretty much post, maybe not every weekend, but certainly Monday to Friday, I'll post every day, occasionally weekends. And the thing that's interesting, I think there's two lenses to this. There's obviously building your network, which is massively important for somebody that runs their own consultancy, that it's all about people trusting you, knowing you, liking you, building up. You know, I haven't just made this stuff up. I haven't just started in my bedroom today. You know, I've got now, you know, you check me out, there's probably 1,000 posts, 1,000 shares. You know, there's lots of information out there. So I think from an authority perspective, I'd like to think that's really helped. The other angle to this, though, is I think it's helped me hone my craft. So I've always been keen. I was interested. I sort of thought back, why do I like writing so much? I always loved writing as a kid. You know, it was one of the things I really enjoyed at school. I like problem solving. I like writing. I like creating stuff. And I think when I started the book, I realized actually I'd probably missed that. I've always been a big reader and a big consumer of content. But actually creating things, I found this is really exciting. I'm starting to do some marketing things and I'm starting to unlock that creative side. And the more you practice, a bit like podcasts, actually, it's helping you communicate. And again, if you can't clearly communicate, talk about some of the younger generation today that sit on their phones and don't know how to talk to people, but it's a skill. They don't teach it in school, right? So practicing how you communicate, being really clear about what works with the audience and what doesn't, learning some of those things. And also, you know, there's a lot of studies, I think, around how you learn through writing. So if you consume something, write it back in your own notes. So to me, when I see things, when I hear things, when I'm working on things, if I can almost write it and create something in a social space, then it gives me feedback on whether it's working or not as well.
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, the discipline to, one of the quotes that there is, you know, writing is thinking, you know, like if you're able to write it, then you are actually thinking about something other than just sort of having a half thought. I feel like we're all having half thoughts these days, thinking about this and then on to the next thing. And ADD is overtaken. So forces you a bit of discipline in that. But the hard part for a lot of people, me included, is, oh, sure, I can write something, but you know what? I make typos, I say dumb stuff, and then people are going to be able to point to it later on. And then putting it out into the world is a whole different thing, a whole different ball of wax. So,
But who cares? Who actually cares? Because there is this thing, when I do consume a lot of other podcasts, and it's this fear, and fear holds us back. So you think, if it's really bad, no one will read it. So if no one reads it, who cares?
Yeah,
and I think there's two things. I mean, I don't talk about politics. I don't talk about religion. Yeah, there's definitely two things that I've been I just don't go near there. So, you know, what I share is my own view. You know, it's not associated with clients. It's my own independent view. And I stay in my lane, I guess, in terms of some of the views I have on certain things.
Okay. So as a social media influencer like me, I guess, you must have a call to action for us. You must have a way that people come and get some of this value. So tell us about what are some next steps to just to get some value without paying you a dime, I guess, by the sounds of it. What do you got?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, LinkedIn is where I'm the most proficient in terms of sharing sharing ideas, sharing content. There's a lot of articles, there's a lot of information in there. I would say the website is probably the go-to. So www.kwrightconsultancy.co.uk. When you go into that website, there's a pop-up, so about 5 seconds. And this is what I mentioned about this free scorecard. So it's called the Profit Booster Scorecard. And it genuinely isn't a sales pitch. It's an opportunity for anyone for free to go in and do a procurement health check of their business. And it literally, I'm going to say 2 minutes, it's probably less than that, if I'm honest. It's 10 questions. You get a report sent to you, and it will highlight where you're doing well and where you're not doing so well. And honestly, as I've said a few times, I've never found anyone that's got it all done. Me included. You know, I don't think you ever get it all done. So it's not about perfection. It's about where are those things that can move the dial for you as a business, whether you're a business owner, an entrepreneur, a functional leader. You know, if you want to understand where you're potentially leaving money on the table, you can take this scorecard and in 2 minutes, you can have that in your inbox and know exactly where to focus.
Okay, well, in the time you've been talking about that, I've already done the first three questions and I've answered no three times. So maybe I should sign up for this.
Well, there you go. I look forward to receiving your invoice, James.
All right. Well, thanks, Keith. And thank you for listening. If you got this far, your special reward. Keith isn't the only one with CTA here. You can go to procurementexpress.com/newsletter. Now, why would you want to be on our newsletter? Well, our newsletter is now super interesting, and I can tell you why. We've started taking recent news events from the last couple of weeks, and we started pointing out obvious spending errors that are happening in SMBs, municipalities, and local countries. A, because it's salacious, and let's face it, it's fun. And B, because we can all learn from these things and make sure that we don't fall into the same trap. So it's a good one to have in your inbox. It'll just keep you up to date with recent, you know, things that are happening. Sometimes it's price inflation. Sometimes it's the latest fraudster technique that's out there. All of these things can trip us up. And it's also a bit of fun, to be honest, as well, to see how people are messing up every now and then. A little bit of slapstick business humor there. So that's it. I'm not going to charge you. You can sign up procurementexpress.com/newsletter. Do it now. You won't regret it. Keith, you've been very interesting to talk to, and thank you very much for coming on the show.
Pleasure. Thanks so much, James.